What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA. We're smoking weed. We're talking mixed martial arts. This is episode 134. I'm Jared here with Paul.
What up?
Coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada, fight capital of the world. Today, we're going to be smoking and talking all about the results from UFC 274, BKFC 25, Canelo's big fight, plus a deep dive into what's next for the UFC lightweight division. Before we get into the combat sports, though, you know what time it is. Grab your weed, fire it up, and let's get into the weed of the week. Smoke weed every day. Whew. Got a nice new strain joining the show today, Paul. A little bit of a red sangria.
Yes, sir.
In this nice raw cone here. Actually, these aren't raw cones. These are OCB bamboo cones. They were out of raws when I went. Whatever. They're all about the same.
Yeah.
This is white sangria crossed with Project 4516. White sangria is Gorilla Glue, or GG, crossed with Gelato 45. And Project 4516 is Gelato 45 crossed with Platinum Puff.
Okay. A lot of gelato with these, though.
Yeah, absolutely. What kind of terpenes are we looking at on this bad boy?
Some interesting terpenes here. So, first of all, this weed's coming in at a nice little 22.7% THC.
That is pretty sporty.
And then we got some carapenoline in there, some limonene, and some, I don't know this one, but humulene.
Humulene. I like the carapenoline. It's supposedly good for your stomach, like if you have stomach issues. That's what they say. It's a tasty weed. It's pretty smooth.
Yeah.
We also got a little bit of leftover weed from last week, including some Tropia Pie and a little bit of Blue Dream Haze that I had left over. So, got a few different things to be smoking on. And, dude, look, I brought a brand new pipe.
I'm so proud.
I know. It's about damn time. You know that bubbler, man? That shit was just killing me every time. Yeah.
Just kept falling over.
Right. I've spilt that thing like 100 times. I'm tired of it. So as much as I love the bubbler, got a nice new piece here. Nice, sturdy, hefty pipe. So no packs three today, no concentrates, all flower. If you're choosing to smoke with us, you certainly don't have to. But if you happen to be, hope you're puffing on something delicious as well. We're going to go ahead and dive into UFC 274. What a card. We had some really good fights.
Some unfortunate things happened leading up as well.
And one of the worst fights I've ever seen in my life. So talk about really high highs and low lows all wrapped up in one pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and there's a lot to unpack here. So let's start with the smaller stuff.
Yeah.
And work our way up to the really, really intense topics at the top of the card, all right?
Well, before we even get into that, I do want to talk about something real quick.
Yeah.
So, during the week, we kind of had a very strange situation happen in the lead up to this.
Talking about the lightweight?
Weigh-ins. Yeah.
The lightweight championship?
Well, not only that, the card as a whole. So, unfortunately, not only do we have the champion miss weight, but there was 20 people on this card that were 0.5 over or more.
Now, what is the source for this information that you've got here?
I believe it's Aaron Bronzer, but ESPN.
So it's coming. This is coming from ESPN.
Yeah. So these are people that actually are got the hand to the.
Yeah, this isn't Joe Q Public's MMA website.
Yeah. So what supposedly happened is the check scale in the hotel was 2 pounds off and wasn't calibrated correctly, which is just ridiculous.
And it resulted in the UFC's lightweight champion, Charles Oliveira, missing weight by a half a pound, being unable to cut that extra half pound in time, therefore being stripped of his title prior to the fight so that Gaethje could win the title. Charles could not win the title. Ultimately, and we'll get to the details later, Charles wins the fight. But he is still not the champion. The championship is technically vacant, although obviously he will be one of the two people fighting for it next. So it seems an exercise in futility, if you ask me.
Well, and my biggest part is, like, where does the fault lie, you know?
But, yeah, if this is a legitimate claim, which we can assume it is, coming from ESPN. So let's just assume that that's authentic, and we have 20 fighters that indicate that they were off weight a minimum of a half a pound.
It
doesn't affect the lower fighters so much. It affected Charles Oliveira the most.
Well, like,
a half-pound allowance. In most fights, you have a one-pound allowance.
Yeah.
Not in championship fights, though, so everybody understands.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, too, is with it being a calibration issue, that is just, like, it's just so wrong in so many ways that a lot of these guys were forced, well, at least Charles, was not only forced to vacate his title, but forced to give up a percentage of his purse as well based on a problem. Yeah, I get the weight is his problem, and don't get me wrong. I'm on this show. I've adamantly been on the side of how dare you miss weight.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But in this case here, it's just I can't really fault Charles, because I've been around like a lot of like different weigh-ins and stuff like that. And one thing that's always, you know, kind of uniform across all different weigh-ins and all like check scales and stuff like that, because they're usually not only calibrated, but then certified by the state.
Why wouldn't they be?
Exactly. With that being said, so what are we doing wrong? Why are we not having one that is, one, not calibrated correctly? And if it's not calibrated correctly, it's not going to be certified by the state. So why? I just don't understand the law, lapse in judgment that, I don't know if it's the people who work for the UFC, the people who work for the commission, or...
Yeah, we don't know if it's the Arizona commissions.
Yeah.
Or the UFCs, or really both of their faults.
Yeah.
I would think that check scales would be readily made available by both the promotion and the commission.
Yeah.
And have somebody whose job it is to make sure that they're accurate. This is not a difficult job. These are the biggest organization in the business. And so, you know, to be clear, these 20 fighters outside of Charles Oliveira who were not in title fights have a one-pound allowance. Charles Oliveira in a title fight, there is no one-pound allowance. No. You have to be dead on the weight or under. Yeah. Now, and he has actually had weight problems in the past, but this was at 145 pounds. Since moving to 55, he's actually shown up underweight a couple times at 153 and 152 for fights. So I have a hard time believing that he just fucked up his cut.
Yeah.
I just don't buy that, especially with this backup information of 20 other fighters being reported by ESPN. So what the fuck is the UFC going to do about this? They stripped their champ. They cost him, because I guarantee you he got fucked with his pay, because he was no longer the champion, and champions qualify for a different pay scale. So he immediately reverted back to a non-title fight pay scale for him,
and then which I'm 20% sure is took dramatic, off the top, bro. Too.
Yeah. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Not only talking the pay scale changing, but then also on top of that pay scale changing, you're taking 20% off of that lower level salary that he gets anyways.
Mm-hmm. And the possibility of pay-per-view points as a champion as well. That would have been taken away too. He just got fucked financially from this.
Absolutely.
And if it was his fault, then that's what you get. But if it is this scale problem here, that's a real can of worms. And what do you think the UFC is going to do? I personally think they're just going to try to push that aside and forget about it.
Dana said supposedly he's going to hire somebody that is going to be able to certify the check scales for people or some shit like that.
My immediate thought is there's not that person. What do you guys, would you just pass out scales from Walmart? What's
strange though? What's strange about the whole situation is kind of another piece that is kind of weird. But there seems to be like some kind of notion that the scales were tampered with in some way.
Because what would the goal of that be? You mean just like an outsider just came in and
because a lot of the people that missed weight were all like the Brazilian guys. If you look at all up and down and women up and down the card. A lot of the Brazilian men and women were the ones that missed weight.
Yeah, because I'll play devil's advocate here, just for the sake of the show. What about the opposite side? Like Chandler made weight. Ferguson made weight.
Yeah.
Gaethje, he didn't have no half-pound problems. He wasn't a half-pound over. Mm-hmm. I mean, are they using a different scale? Were these fighters on the same scale? Was Gaethje and Oliveira using the same Czech scale prior? I mean, these are all things that should be easy to find out. I'm just saying. Well, if they are using different scales, and all these fighters who missed were using one scale, perhaps, and the others were using a different one, that's just further proof that
it was just, it was a scale. It was off the rails. Yeah.
But if they're both using the same scale, then that kind of refutes the whole thing.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's important information to know. I would hope that somebody in MMA journalism would be actually diving into this, because there's a real story there.
There is, yeah.
But the problem is, as you and I know, there's very few actual journalists that dig into stories in mixed martial arts. They tend to just talk about tweets and goddamn Jake Paul.
Well, not only that, in a situation where something that would put any kind of blame on the UFC comes to light, Dana has them on such a leash that he knows if you write anything bad about him, your credentials will be pulled.
Right. It's very unfortunate. I mean, that is partially to blame. I mean, there's been several reporters that have had their figurative nuts cut off by Dana and haven't been allowed in for years.
The biggest one in the game.
And even Ariel for, you know. So, anyways, that's quite a controversy. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the fights.
Yeah, and we'll circle back to some of the ramifications of that when we get to the title fight. But let's talk about some of these things on the undercard that stood out for us. There was a lot of pretty decent fights here.
Yeah, my favorite fight of the prelims had to be Brandon Royval versus Matt Schnell. Just like two guys who just went after each other for as long as it lasted. Ends up as a submission by Brandon Royval on a one-handed guillotine, which was fucking just disgusting.
Around the 2-minute mark. That was ridiculous.
But they came out with fireworks. Both of them were just throwing all caution to the wind. Schnell ends up knocking Royval down, and then when he steps into his guard, Royval's up able to secure a guillotine, and that's...
Flyweight's having a lot of good fights,
like, that's so great for flyweight, because thinking about this division 2, 3, maybe 4 years ago, there was no division. And now we got fights like this that are just making there be more and more chatter about who could possibly be the next contender.
Yeah, absolutely, man. That was an exciting fight. I like Brandon Royval. He's fucking looking pretty sharp.
Yeah.
What about that Francisco Trinaldo versus Danny Roberts brawl?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Dude, Trinaldo's 43 years old.
I know. I was looking at that.
Like, he put it on, that dude.
Yeah, it was. You know what it was? He had just controlled the pace, and where every second of the fight was taking place, and just... Put it like you said.
Yeah, he wins the decision, but I mean, it was pretty lopsided. I mean, he outstruck him 80-35 for God's sake, and he had a submission attempt in there.
Yeah,
it was just an ass whooping. And you know, Danny Roberts is a solid fighter.
He is, yeah. In the size of Roberts is what I was like really really like looking at him like, God damn, how does this man weigh 170 pounds?
Seriously,
it was ridiculous.
And then how does a 43-year-old man? Whoop his ass. You know what I really enjoyed? That Randy Brown versus Chaos Williams fight. Now, that did wind up getting bumped up to the main card. It was originally a prelim fight, but we had Donald Cerrone and Joe Lozon be pulled from this card at the last minute. They're saying at the moment, due to food poisoning on Donald Cerrone, he was throwing up, extremely ill.
Couldn't hold anything down.
And like, Donald's the type of fighter, you know, that he would have done absolutely anything to be there. In fact, his oldest son was at this show, about to see his dad fight live for the first time.
And that also was like leading up to with the pre-fight press conferences. That's something that he talked about a lot and how he looked forward to that. So there's no way.
Yeah, super unfortunate, but there's definitely no conspiracy or controversy here. The man was, without a doubt, extremely ill. Mm-hmm. And just, that was a bummer. We had Carlos Lozoya on the show last week, who trains with Joe, and you know, he had a lot of interesting things to say about that fight, and I think all of us were looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming it's probably going to get rescheduled.
Most definitely.
Because I don't know why they would book something different
scrap it
for these two.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it'll be on the next pay-per-view card or maybe even headlining a non-pay-per-view.
Yep. But so we end up with Randy Brown versus Chaos Williams just kick the main card off. And
wow.
It was a great fight. It was a great fight.
This is in the welterweight division. You know, we wind up getting Randy Brown with a decision, but it was a back-and-forth affair.
Yeah, I mean, you could have had it either way because with the knockdown from Williams in the, I believe it was the second, I feel like it was weird because it was one of those fights where, like, Brown got knocked down, but then he kind of got up and won the rest of the round. So, like, it was just so close that, like, I think you could have had either guy winning, but I think that was a hell of a performance by Randy Brown.
Absolutely, and Chaos Williams doesn't really lose any shine here either. That dude has got such power, such grit. I don't think he's going anywhere in the division down. I mean, I think he's going to maintain his current status and be a contender in the future. But Randy Brown, you know, coming off the show like he has, he's tall, he's powerful.
Yep,
I think he's going to be a problem in this division for some folks here real soon. Now we get to the part of the card where, remember I was saying earlier, it went up and down?
Yeah.
This is pretty solid up to this point through the undercard. You know, obviously we can't talk about every fight that was on there, but there's 14 fights on this card, and then one fell out, and so there's still 13. I mean, Jesus, dude. That was
a lot. Yeah.
A very long card. Dude, Ovince St. Preux versus Shogun Hua. And who won? I think it was OSP. That was a fight in the UFC. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, afterwards, I basically was like, I don't ever want to see either of these two guys fight again.
Well, nothing could be as bad as a co-main event, but it wasn't that impressive. I just felt like neither of them were willing to take any kind of risk to really put it on each other, and it is what it is. Couple older guys.
What you just said is true, though. Like, I hated this fight when it was happening.
Yeah.
And when it was over.
Yeah.
But then you're right. Like, a couple fights later, the co-main event happened. And now it's hard to, like, really hate on that fight too much.
Yeah. At least there was some bit of action.
You know, really. So when it's all in comparison, right? When you look at it that way, it was a lot better. But still, keeping it 100, I don't mean disrespect. Why are we watching OSP fight Shogun Hua in 2022?
Can anybody explain that to me? It was an unneeded rematch, too, because the first time they fought OSP, he literally knocked them cold.
Yeah.
What was the need for this rematch?
It was a fucking split decision win. OSP outstruck Shogun 62-54. That's about the only meaningful stat there. They just both looked old. Shogun looked old and slow. And it's kind of painful if you watched him through his pride days and you know what a killer he used to be. Like, why are we still doing this? He's like,
well, that's the thing, too. OSP,
58 years old.
When you look at OSP, too, I feel like he's lost that explosion that made him like what he was. You know what I mean? Like, a big part of his game was how he would just, like, because he's from that former D1 football player, like, background, his ability to, like, from point A to point B and explode, that was, like, part of the reason everyone thought he was going to beat John Jones and all this other stuff.
Oh, that's all gone.
I feel like both these guys are in the twilight of their careers and they're just holding on.
That's like a Bellator fight. Like, that's the shit that Bellator used to pick up when they were picking up a lot of UFC older dudes and putting on fights. That's what I felt like. Mm-hmm. No shade on them. They both had good careers, but dude, can we stop?
Yeah. True.
Now we're getting into the meat of the card. Now we're bouncing the opposite way, right, to a high point with the next fight.
Yeah, this next fight was the high point of the night, in my opinion.
This is the lightweight fight between Michael Chandler and Tony Ferguson.
Very interesting. If you see the result, you'll sit there and go, man, Tony's washed up. But if you watch the fight, it was very, very competitive all the way through up to that freaking just...
Like, it was a knockout in round two, victory for Chandler, for Chandler, which we'll get to. But the first round was very competitive.
Very competitive. Like, I texted you, and I was like, man, even Tony, like, coming out and, like, in the weigh-ins, I was like, Tony looks, like, really motivated. You know what I mean? And that was one thing in his last couple fights that I felt was absent, like, the motivation. And
yeah, I agree. He's looked, and he looked sharp through that first round. Like he
drops Chandler in the first round.
Yeah, and he looked powerful. I thought, man, Tony can win this.
Yeah.
And then the second round happened, and Chandler unleashes this ridiculous front kick, which he said he saw an opening for. And it slept, literally put Tony out instantly. I mean, he was out cold for at least 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Like feet crossed, sleeping like a baby. Borderline scary out cold.
Yeah, 100%. Like everyone I was watching with was just sitting there like, damn, Tony's still down. Holy shit, Tony's still down. And freaking Chandler with probably one of the best like finishes and post-fight like promo to get cut
doing
right after
backflips while
back
Tony's
flips,
out cold.
Tony's out cold. Tops on the mic, calls out the goddamn whole division. Just the energy of the crowd and the energy of like everything after he did that. It was just nuts.
How about when they were you know, when Buffer's there announcing the victor and they're, you know, Ferguson standing next to Chandler. And you can see Chandler just looking smug, as he should.
Yeah.
And Tony looked shell-shocked, bro. Yeah,
lost.
The look in his eyes was, man, you feel that.
Yeah, 100%.
Like he looked like he crazy. Just woke up. Didn't have no understanding of what happened other than knowing like he had just been fucked up beyond belief.
And no matter what anybody wants to say, nobody does that to Tony Ferguson.
Nah.
Nobody.
Nah.
Dude, I'm telling you. Michael Chandler could have one of the most exciting UFC careers we've ever seen so far.
He could be the guy, which is crazy because if you just look at his UFC record, it's not impressive. Like if you're just looking at the two and like, okay, he's won and two and lost two.
But you look at the strength of schedule, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah, and how those fights went. Like you break down what happened in those fights, how they...
Because if you... Let's just do it real quick. If you look at it... Coming in, he fights Hooker, KOs him real quick. Mm-hmm. We didn't see much, but that was electric. You know, that was where the division, Khabib had just left, and we were looking for someone for Charles to fight for the vacant belt. So he sneaks in there, ends up fighting Charles for the belt. And literally, had there been maybe 10 seconds left in the first round, we could be talking about Michael Chandler being the UFC champion.
Yeah, he was putting it on him, and he had Charles down.
Yeah, and then going in, to his next fight, he fights Justin Gaethje in another Fight of the Year candidate. I think it won Fight of the Year last year. And just like an absolute war over three rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And like, then going into this.
There's an argument that took something out of Gaethje possibly too.
Could
looking
be,
at this next fight.
But yeah, true. And then going into this one here, we're talking 3 out of 4 fight bonuses. Just, the dude is electric, man.
Absolutely electric. He's got the microphone skills necessary. He's actually, when you see him in interviews, he's a charismatic guy. He seems to be super intelligent.
Yeah.
Super
smart.
Because,
like, he's the whole idea that he has, like, his own tagline and shit that see you at the top, like, that's something that is, it's marketable. You know what I mean? It's something that,
absolutely,
because,
man.
And we talked about this when he first signed with the UFC, is not only is he getting opportunity to like show that he belonged and always belonged, but like also he's bringing all the fans and all the people that fucked with him before, plus like all this new, just this new promotion and this new level of like eyeballs on his career than there's ever been before.
100%. There's only one downside to Michael Chandler, and thus far,
his age.
It's not a problem. Yeah, is he's 36 years old. That's it. But like I said, it's not a problem thus far.
It's not, though. He's a fucking...
And we're going to come back to Michael Chandler because we're going to talk about this division and where it's at when we get to the title fight.
That dude is a robot, though. Like, he's fucking Terminator. Like he has a ridiculous physique for a 36-year-old.
Dude, it's insane. He's a fucking in amazing shape. He's got power. He's got strong
wrestling. Yeah,
that's where I think. Well, we'll get to it. We'll get to his call outs and his other stuff. But now this is where the card just takes an abrupt crash. And not only does this card take a crash, I mean, it took a crash to like the 9th fucking rung of hell with this next fight. We're talking about the Rose Namajunas versus Carla Esparza, 115-pound women's championship. What a shock this was. Who saw this coming? I mean, we know Carla's a wrestler and maybe not the most exciting.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest. This is literally one of the worst fights I've seen in my life. Like, without a doubt. If not the worst.
I almost lost the will to live over that 5-round fight.
Dude, it was terrible. Like, literally just terrible. There's no other way to, like, there's really no other way to, like.
I'm fans of both of these women.
I am, too.
To be clear.
Yeah.
That was the worst. It's without a doubt, it's the worst title fight in combat sports that's ever happened.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
In high-level combat professional sport. Definitely in the UFC.
I do want to take it back to something I said last week that I do think was a big role in this fight, and that's Rose's mental game. I think a big part of why she fought that way is this was a rematch, obviously. And she was submitted by Carla years ago by getting taken down, beat up, and then submitted.
Yeah, in the Ultimate Fighter finale for the very first belt in this division.
And I think that a big part of her game plan, although it wasn't necessarily to be inactive, but just keep herself to a level where there was no chance Rose was going to get taken down to begin with, you know?
Right.
And I guess that's the only, like, real rationale I can make out of the game plan going in, because that's one thing is after this fight, Rose has now come out and been like, well, you guys just didn't appreciate my game plan. My defense was as good as her offense. And it's like, well, that's
a ridiculous
thing. Yeah, like, it's just a ridiculous thing to say. That's not fighting.
For those of our listening audience who were lucky enough to not watch this fight, let's give them a little bit of insight to what we mean here with some stats, okay? In the first round of a 5-round fight, 5 minutes, each fighter landed 4 strikes out of 19 in that round. In round two, Rose landed 3 strikes, Carla landed 4. In round three, Rose landed 11. Carla landed 9.
And that's the round she took her down in, right?
Mm-hmm. In round four, Rose had 6 strikes. Carla had 8. Ooh. And finally, in round five, Rose 13, Carla 5. And these were all strikes from the outside. If you look at the landed by target or by position, Rose, she landed 97% of her shots from a distance, okay? If you look at Carla, it's 90. Okay, so and what that translates to for our audience who didn't have to watch this fucking torture was two professional fighters standing about 6 feet apart throwing punches that were nowhere close to fucking landing at each other. And every once in a while, they'd move in and one of those shots would land, and thus you've got 4 out of 19, 3 out of 14 shots with a 97% landed by distance because that 1 or 2 gets in. Mm-hmm. It was absurdity.
Yeah, it was terrible.
This wouldn't happen in boxing. The ref would not allow this to happen. These fighters would have both been penalized and points would have been taken away for lack of action. Mark Goddard was the guy, right?
No, it was Keith Peterson.
Keith Peterson was the guy.
No nonsense.
No nonsense, Keith Peterson sat there and didn't do shit. It got to the point where the commentators were comparing what referee would be worse or better than Keith Peterson by enforcing action. And even they were saying, this is the worst title fight we've ever seen, live, during a broadcast.
To the point where, you know, Joe Rogan's a very straight-up guy. And to the point where, even in the post-fight interview, he asks her about the inactivity. He asks her about just the
absolutely
the lack of action, lack of offense on both sides. And I mean, I kind of get what Carla's saying in the post fight.
What does she say?
Basically, she can't fight someone that doesn't want to fight her back, which is stupid. It's a stupid thing to say. But like, I guess like if you really look at the numbers, I guess like.
They're pretty damn close.
They're pretty similar, but then I feel the difference is where the leg kicks come in. Because when you're talking about that strike by distance stat that you were talking about before, she landed, what is it?
Strikes total. Rose landed 38. Carla landed 30.
Yeah. I feel like the leg kicks would literally be the only difference in the takedown in round three.
Well, I mean, then there was one takedown from Rose and two from Carla. Rose was 1 of 1. Carla was 2 of 11 on attempts. And control time for Rose was 10 seconds. Control time for Carla was 22 seconds.
Yeah.
This was worst thing I've ever seen.
I'm trying to make some rationale here, Jared, but
there is none. And again, fans of these women, fans of women's MMA, and I personally feel like you all just set the sport back with this shit. Because there is bound to be people who have not been exposed to women's MMA that tuned into that shit and were like, what the fuck is this?
And not only that, you got to think they, without having any kind of, exact expertise in women's MMA, they look at those two and go, wow, that's the pinnacle?
Yeah,
that's,
this is the best of the best. Champion? Holy
this is the best of the best. Wow. Rough.
It was Carla and Rose neither had any right to act proud after that.
Yeah.
They were both raising their arms in victory like they did something. Carla was trying to act proud, which I get in one hand, like you said, you just won a belt. But that was, they would have been better off at least pulling the Aljamain Sterling's initial reaction when he got the disqualification thing. Was he was like, nah, I threw the belt away. It would have been better if she was like, yeah, that was a stinker performance. I'm sorry. What can I say?
Yeah.
We're going to rematch.
No, shut up. Don't even speak that to the universe.
But that'll destroy women's MMA. Yeah. No one will ever watch again.
Well, that's the thing, too, is when you look at, in comparison, just what you'd want the casuals to see versus what they got to see. I really hope that more people saw Zhang Weili versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk than people that saw this fight, okay? And that's just where we're at. Is now this number one contenders fight between Zhang and Joanna being the second time, like now that is, in my opinion, whoever wins that is going to be the champion next. Yeah. I do not see a scenario in which Carla now becomes this dominant champion that reigns over the division for a long time. It's just not realistic, in my opinion.
And Rose, clearly, we've talked about it before.
It's that case.
Mad respect. Head issues. She got mental blocks.
Fucking head case.
She was way in her head. Her cornering was terrible. For some reason, you've got... I know they're. I don't think they're legally married, but I mean, her and Pat Barry have been together for as long as I can remember. They've been together so long; it was back when people thought it was weird because Rose was so young.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't mean any disrespect. They're just still together now, but he's taking the lead in the corner over Trevor Whitman, Paul.
That doesn't make any sense.
I mean, who's a nationally, worldwide renowned coach?
Yeah.
And who is a former fighter that's best known at this point, honestly, as Rose Namajunas's man?
I mean. Well, that's the thing, too, is it comes down to the little things when you talk about the difference between champions winning and losing their belts. And when you're talking about a game of inches, you cannot not listen to a guy like Trevor Whitman. You know what I mean? Because that was one thing, is he kept telling Rose, get more active, get more active, get more active. But then on the other side, you have Pat who's sitting there going, listen to them boo. Our game plan's working.
Yeah, he was encouraging, telling him we're doing exactly what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Everything is great. And I don't think you can have a husband-wife team like that. You're fucking biased, bro.
Yeah.
And who's she going to listen to?
And I don't blame you for being biased either.
No, that's why you don't do it.
I get the dynamic, but exactly like you're saying. I just don't think that maybe you should be the head of the corner.
Not over a guy like women.
And that's kind of what we talked about. When it happens to all these great fighters, there's personal relationships, and then there's also what's gonna, be the difference in a fight. And when you mix feelings involved with what reality is, you get a skewed version of what is actually going on. You know what I mean? You don't get, if my mom's my corner, she's not gonna tell me I'm getting my fucking ass kicked. She's gonna. Right. Hey, you still got this. We can still win. That is like the overall difference between someone like Pat leading the corner and then someone like Whitman, who is a fucking genius when it comes to striking and pretty much everything in the game. And he's kind of like taking a back seat and didn't really get very much information or words in between rounds.
Dude, it was terrible. Rose's attitude after the fight was terrible, talking about, I thought I won. I mean, are you fucking kidding me? She didn't even fire jabs. like, she, I get the game plan of not kicking since that
and
led
for the
to,
first three rounds, she kind of let Carla walk her down because, like, Carla was kind of, like, chasing the takedown, sort of. So, like, and, like, when we talk about something that has this much inactivity, like, it's, like that's what we have to judge the fight off of, who's walking forward and who's walking backwards. You know what I mean? Like, that's literally how inactive this fight was.
There
was
one
so
round,
bad.
Yeah, where the commentary team basically agreed that Carla Esparza won the round because she grabbed Rose's leg in an attempted takedown.
Yeah, exactly.
That was what. That's how bad a fight this fight was, people.
And then in the fourth round,
someone grabbing a leg won a round.
Well, that's the thing too, because then when you go to the third round, they go DC. Just gets lit up by Joe Rogan because he's like, well, fucking Rose landed that real slick uppercut, and Joe turns to DC and goes, "You really think you get to win a round off one uppercut?" Like, and that's just where we were at. Like, you know?
Dude, I'm agitated talking about it. Yeah. Like, this is I mean, we're not trying to be exaggerating here. I don't know how that happens at a professional level, and no one does anything. The ref stands there with his thumb up his fucking ass. Like, that literally can't happen in boxing. What we saw wouldn't happen in a smoker fight somewhere. Yeah. Like, it fucking doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, they might try it, but the ref doesn't allow it. They're like, no, action. He'll start taking points, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll fucking end a fight if you keep that shit up. I don't even know what to say, Paul. Let's move on.
Stalling.
Because I don't care what's next. Dear God, don't let a fucking rematch happen.
You better hope Joanna or freaking Zhang Weili doesn't come up and just fucking... Because that fight coming up, I feel like whoever wins that is the champion, dude. That's just like my overall consensus 100%. Of where this division's at.
And unfortunately for Rose, she has such mental blocks. I don't know if she can recover from this. Like, you talk about shit in the goddamn bed.
Well, and then also her just adamant denial of what reality is.
Right. And now Carla's got two victories over her. Obviously, the first one fucked her up six ways from Sunday.
Yeah.
And then the second one, I mean, it's crazy because Rose is a fucking killer.
She is. When she wants to be. When she wants to be, though, Jared. Like, that's the thing. Is everyone, like, says they love how she's, like, walking to the ring. I'm the best. But, like, that whole, like, idea is, like, part of it is a confidence thing and her, like, doing what she's got to do. But also... like, that shows somewhat of an insecurity that she has to say that to herself and not understand that and know that she already is.
Yeah.
You know?
Honestly, I guess I'm agitated, too, because I've been a fan of Rose since way before she was signed in the UFC. She was on my radar when she was in Invicta pulling flying arm bars, and people were like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And she's gotten so far and reached to the height where I really thought she was past this level of fucking... And it's not all her fault. Carla didn't do good.
Yeah.
Carla looked terrible, too.
Yeah. Both of them.
I mean, goddamn.
Neither of them can really, honestly sit there and be mad at the decision, whether one way or the other. Because, like, what the fuck did you do to change it?
Dude, this should have been a draw of some sorts, or I don't know.
They made Rose vacate the belt.
Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, you have to re-win the title. Like, you both technically lost, so the title is now vacant, and you both take the L.
No, you don't get a shot.
And everybody who bought that pay-per-view, we're going to go and give you a $10 refund.
I mean... So, with things being what they are, though, I mean, good for Carla. I guess she's the longest. I can't remember the exact stat, but they said it was the longest time there's ever been between one fighter being the champion and then coming back and regaining the title because it was like 2,650 days or some bullshit like that. But you waited all that goddamn time to put on a performance like that. I will never understand.
You better win your next fight.
Yeah, fuck.
I mean, seriously, again, fans of both these women respect their careers, what they've done. That doesn't deny reality of that being. And we'll end with this because I think we both agree. That's the worst fight that's taken place as a title fight in the UFC, period, the end. Ever. Maybe the worst fight that's been in the UFC.
Ever.
Ever.
Well,
now the card bounces back up.
Way bounce back. Real bounce back. Real bounce back moment for this card.
Charles Oliveira versus Justin Gaethje, which we've kind of touched on before for the 155-pound title. Gaethje could win it. Oliveira can't win it no matter what.
Yeah.
Ultimately, Oliveira wins with a rear naked choke in round one. And tell me your thoughts on how this fight went down, Paul.
At this point, I guess I would have to call it a classic Charles Oliveira performance. You know what I mean? Like, he's now kind of had this – I don't know if it's a game plan or it's a – something he does to goad his opponent into it, but he just seems to throw all the caution into the wind for the first 2 minutes of every fight, mm-hmm. and after that, his whole game tightens up, and he starts doing things that he's best at. And yeah. I really feel like this fight was just like all the other ones. He came out strong, kind of had his hands down, let Gaethje get off some good leg kicks, some good strikes, but he was tagging him back. But I think it was a situation where, I mean, this could be controversial, but a couple of, there was two knockdowns by Gaethje, right?
Technically, there was only one knockdown by each fighter, if you go look at the stats, but I think we'd all agree there was two knockdowns.
Well, yeah, but yeah. I think, and this is a big part of why they maybe didn't score him this second knockdown, is, yeah, he knocked him down, but it was kind of like a situation where it was like Charles kind of being like, ooh, that was a good one, now jump in my guard and I'm going to choke your ass out. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? The second one, for sure. The first one was more legitimate, but the second one that they didn't count, I did think it was a situation where Charles was like, come on, bud.
He's definitely baits people down into that. You're right, 100%. Uh-huh.
And
he knocked Gaethje down legit too. His striking is solid. He's got power. You don't see that happen to Gaethje too often. Like, he basically, he outstruck him 30-21. Some of that was on the ground, but not a whole lot. Because once he was on the ground, he just
seamless transitions.
I know Oliveira is top level, but how much jujitsu is Gaethje training here? Because he's looking kind of white beltish in there, my man.
Well, here's the thing, too, that you have to kind of take into account is when Khabib submitted him like that, Khabib did daze him and then do it. And then in this situation as well, Charles did knock him on his ass and then he did put
Yeah, that's the hands being on fair. Him. It's so, true. I mean,
just trying to be fair to Gaethje. But at the same time, you got beat at your own game on the feet.
You did. That's what it pains me. And the way he's losing here in these top level fights, and I don't mean disrespect here because I'm a fucking fan. He's fighting, if you take away his kicks, he fights like he's in the BKFC. Yeah. Like, it's just knuckle up, son.
He's like a modern-day Chuck Liddell.
Where, incidentally, I feel like he would have great success if he went over there.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he can't fight in the UFC or nothing. I'm just saying it's disappointing because I think he has this top-level talent that he just seems to just say, fuck it, and go dropping bombs, and now he's getting knocked down, and he can't hang with these dudes on the ground. Not even fucking close. No. I mean, you try to talk shit on Conor, dude. I'm sorry. I think Conor's better on the ground. I mean, Conor's pulled some nice fucking moves. Like, he did some shit on the ground with fucking in the Diaz fight that was pretty high level.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing is,
I haven't seen that from Gaethje at all.
Not once.
So, I don't know. But Oliveira, though, I mean, he gets yet another submission to extend his record of having the most in the UFC.
Yeah.
Let's take out this nonsense with the belt. He's the champ. He won. Still the champ.
And one last thing I do want to bring up about Gaethje also, though, is that's kind of par for the course for him, though. You know what I mean? Like, people can say what they want, like, as far as, like, what level and who he could hang with. But Justin Gaethje, his whole career has been built on the fact of him being wild. And, when you get in these big, high-level fights, you just can't fight like that. You can't.
Oh, man, this isn't WSOF.
Yeah, well, not only that, it's like there's a lot of, what I was saying before, whether it's a game plan or just a coincidence or what Charles, when he does and what Gaethje does are two different things. Charles starts the fights wild, but what he does is he uses that wildness to find holes and give his opponents confidence that they're, about to finish him, or you know what I mean? And whereas, Gaethje just throws all caution to the wind 24-7, no matter what, and the fight is going to be a war no matter if he's fighting Michael Chandler, Charles Oliveira, or whoever else, you know what I mean? And that's, you live by the sword, you die by the sword, you know what I mean? And I feel like that's just Gaethje starting to hit a level where you just can't fucking fight everybody like that.
No, dude, I love Justin Gaethje. I respect him. Met him. Cool dude. No disrespect. I don't want to see him fight another top level guy for a minute. I'm kind of over it seeing this happen repetitively.
Him and Dustin Poirier have been a very, very similar situation at this point.
Yeah, Poirier's talking about 170, but let's talk about the division now, because now there's a vacant title, even though Oliveira is still the rightful champ in most people's eyes. We've got what you who you just mentioned. Since Gaethje was the number one ranked contender, number two behind him was or is Dustin Poirier, but he's in limbo because there's a lot of talk about going to 170. After that, we've got Islam Makhachev and then Benil Dariush. Now they're fighting each other.
Yeah.
Then after that, at number five, we've got Michael Chandler. Now, this is all before the results of this last fight. Mm-hmm. After Chandler, we've got Dos Anjos, then Tony Ferguson, then Gillespie, and then I don't know what McGregor's doing on that. But so, but this puts the division in some limbo here.
Yeah.
Poirier's lost to Gaethje. Obviously, I mean,
Poirier beat Gaethje.
I mean, Poirier's lost to Oliveira.
Yeah.
So he's not getting a rematch anytime soon.
Yeah, no. Gaethje's lost Oliveira.
Gaethje's lost. He's not getting a rematch. We've got a clear-cut number one contender here with Dariush and Makhachev.
Yeah. But now on Makhachev's side, he's saying that he shouldn't even have to fight Dariush now. He should just fight Charles next. And
well, I know they got postponed, but they haven't rebooked it yet?
Yeah. No.
Oh, I thought they had been. Uh-uh. Well, that does throw this division just seems a little screwball right now.
Yeah.
Then well, what do you do with Chandler? Because he just made a hell of a statement knocking out Ferguson in that match.
Like we said before, he was a second away from being the UFC champion.
Mm-hmm. And while he has a loss to Oliveira, too, that was a fucking fight right there.
Yeah.
That was a fight.
Absolutely. And like you said before, too, he's marketable. That's a huge win. The fashion in which he won, mm-hmm. that's a highlight forever.
And you know Makhachev, yeah, he's good. Mm-hmm.
He's good, but his last win is against Bobby Green.
Yeah, and what's a big fight here? What's bigger?
How do you justify a title shot with one guy who just fought Bobby Green and the other guy just flatlined Tony Ferguson?
Yeah, and Tony Ferguson, who was looking sharp as fuck.
Yeah. I just understand.
100%, bro.
That just doesn't make any sense. Well, but let's take a step back here and also think about who the champion actually called out. Because the champion didn't call out Benil Dariush. He didn't call out Islam. He didn't call out Michael Chandler. The champion called out Conor McGregor.
That he did.
And that throws a whole wrench in everybody's plans. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you and I know the UFC will put Conor McGregor against anybody he chooses.
Absolutely. He's still the guy who can walk into a title shot.
It's a whole different conversation. You know what I mean?
It's not even going to be about that.
Yeah. But
I think those are the title options for Oliveira next are going to be Michael Chandler or Conor McGregor. Now, Conor seems pretty intent to going to 170. I don't like his odds of beating Usman. He has a possibility against Oliveira because of what you just outlined, how Oliveira fights.
Yeah.
So you're going to do that to the wrong person. They're going to light you the fuck up, homie. Uh-huh. Conor could still be that guy. He used to be that guy for sure.
Yeah.
If the Conor that fought Eddie Alvarez fought Charles Oliveira, Oliveira would get murdered in the first 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But we don't know about that anymore at all.
You also have to acknowledge that Conor McGregor is not that.
No, he ain't that dude.
He's not that dude anymore. Well, here's the thing. I know we just got done talking about him, but let's bring him right back up. Michael Chandler versus Conor McGregor also makes a lot of sense.
He called for that fight.
It makes a lot of sense to me. He said he'd go up to 170. Both guys are super marketable. You know, you can headline that 5 rounds in any major stadium anywhere, and that thing's going to sell out. You know what I mean? I think it has its own ability to carry its own pay-per-view, and I kind of view this lightweight title picture now as a bit of a tournament. Like, not like no one's getting whether they win or lose, no one's necessarily being guaranteed a shot.
Yeah.
But I do think we're at a spot now where whether you want to call Charles Oliveira the champion or not, we need to see a couple other guys fight each other till we can really look at a true number one contender and be like, okay, that guy's the one who gets the shot next.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I do think that needs to happen because everybody can say they have a claim at this point.
I, as a fan like the Chandler Connor, which you just mentioned, either at 55 or even at 70. I can certainly see why Michael Chandler wants that fight. But if I were to put myself in Conor McGregor's position, I don't see why on earth he would take that fight when we both just said that if he wants a title fight, he can get a title fight.
But do you think...
So, what does he get for fighting Chandler?
Like marketing, money. I feel like there's more money to come.
There's more money if he can fight Usman. I don't think he's got a prayer of winning.
No.
But him fighting for the welterweight title for a historic third opportunity, oh, yeah, there's a fucking pay-per-view that's going to sell.
Absolutely. I'm just saying, I don't think... I think there's a much better chance that UFC were to offer Conor McGregor a 175-pound main event against Michael Chandler than they would ever offer him a 170-pound main event against Kamaru Usman. Like, in all reality, I think Usman...
See, I think he'd go for the Oliveira title shot, then. I think he can walk right into that.
Yeah, I think there's a much better chance he walks into the Oliveira fight than he would ever get a chance to fight Usman. Because even Dana's kind of laughed that off when people brought it up. It was like... Dana
laughed off Floyd Mayweather, too.
Yeah.
You know. So, it's Conor.
Yeah.
Like, if Conor's like, this is what I want, it's probably going to happen.
Because that's the thing. He has this aura now that not only... that's what people think, though, too. It's like, people always say, like, oh, Conor has, like, preferential treatment from the UFC. But you also have to think, he kind of has preferential treatment from his fellow fighters as well. Because nobody... He's not the one calling all these guys out. These guys all called him out. There was about five different people that called Conor McGregor out this weekend. And, like...
Absolutely.
You have to... That's a part of it. Because, you know, like, people go, oh, he just gets whatever he wants, blah, blah, blah.
Usman's
blah.
Called
like,
him out before.
Yeah, all these guys are calling him out, and all these guys want to fight him because they know what comes with the territory of, like, getting a high-level pay-per-view like a Conor McGregor pay-per-view. Like,
yeah.
That's just... You can renegotiate yourself into being locked in a really good situation for life, and you are, depending on who you are, you might have a hell of a chance to really fuck him up too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I know Diaz kind of broke the mold as far as like when people saw Conor lose, but like even beating Conor McGregor still has you know weight to it, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Especially this is going to be, and this is where I think Conor is being really smart, is he's bulking up, and if he stays this big, this is a different Conor. Mm-hmm. It's not just Conor's back. Oh, how's his leg? This is a whole new Conor. We've never seen him this big. Yeah. He's fucking humongous. He's fighting at 170. You know, that kind of overtakes the shadow of his past performances a bit and focuses on a different way. But we don't even know if that's going to happen yet.
Well, also, I don't want to turn this into the Conor McGregor show.
Me neither, but...
I don't necessarily think bulking up and putting all that weight on is, like, going to fill the holes of his game. If anything, I think it makes him have more holes because...
Who knows?
He's never carried that much weight around. He's never carried that much muscle mass into a fight. And he's already had some cardio issues in the past. Like,
what?
I don't necessarily think that would fucking...
Are you implying that the McGregor fast program isn't all it's cracked up to be, sir?
It's like, yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't understand how. I don't know.
I don't know either. It'll be interesting.
It's interesting.
It's all speculative now. We'll see. But that really kind of rounds out the fucking UFC card because we just don't know what happens next year. Everything's in a state of limbo. We could debate it back and forth forever, but there are a couple other combat sports that we should touch on. First, you know, we had, week before last, we had old Captain Jack Claffey on the show to discuss his debut at BKFC 25, which took place this weekend as well, headlined by a heavyweight championship between Arnold Adams and Dylan Kleckler. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that card for a minute. Let's talk about Captain Jack. He goes out, he gets a replacement fighter. Yeah. I'm not sure the details around it, but he winds up fighting Rick Caruso, mm-hmm. and he gets the victory round 3, KO with the right uppercut.
Yeah, and he faced a lot of adversity in the fight. I mean, he got tagged up a bit too, and I think that's a good part of it. Like, you know, with him coming into the BKFC from WWE and people not really, like, not that he hasn't been embraced at all, but I'm saying, like, there's still always when a lot of these guys come over from WWE to, like, combat sports, is how are they gonna, you know,
We haven't seen it. We haven't seen your skills yet. Exactly. So.
And I do think he did a good job of not only showing off his skills, but like dealing with adversity and coming out and getting a real solid win. I think the ultimate difference in this fight was his ability to use the clinch. On the outside, because his opponent was a bit bigger than him, on the outside he was getting hit with a lot of like jabs and a lot of like, you know, a lot of the outside punches, but like when he was able to close the distance and get in the clinch, he brutalized this guy.
Well, congratulations to Jack for the victory here, and he's quite likely with this to get, you know, if not a headlining spot, a co-main event. He is a big name. It was a good victory. Like you said, he proved his mettle, gets the big win. Let's go to the co-main here. We had Julian Lane making another appearance in a close fight against David Mundell. He winds up losing 48-47 across the board in what was, like I said, a very close fight. I still think Julian Lane's a top-tier talent in this sport.
I don't know. That's, what, 3 in a row now for him, huh?
I believe it is. And again, it's a razor-close decision. We'll see what's next for him, but he's always an entertaining guy.
Yeah, that's without a doubt.
You know, and right now, that's what this sport needs, you know. It's kind of like in the early days of the UFC, in a way, when you only had this certain pool of guys that have somewhat of a name, and as long as they're exciting,
yeah,
even if they're losing, they're still going to kind of be a big name in the sport. And
Julian
somebody
Lane
that people
is a
wanna
Tank
fight.
Abbott. Of...
There you go, dog. Yeah. That's an excellent comparison. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they need this shit right now. Like, you needed a guy like Tank back then.
Yeah.
So you need fighters like Julian Lane, who's actually, he's good.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs to be able to stick around and be entertaining and be wild and do his thing. Mm-hmm. Now, we did see the new, or not new, but you get so used to Joey Beltran being the heavyweight champion. Now we've got Arnold Adams making his defense against Dylan Kleckler, and he wins in round two, 34 seconds, with a series of punches leading to a knockout with a right hook and a right straight, a few of them.
This was an interesting fight, because one thing about like heavyweights in BKFC is like, not that they throw caution to the wind to a certain level, but because they're so big, there's so much power behind every shot they throw. Like early in the fight, Kleckler dropped Adams, and I was like, whoa, the title might change hands here.
Mm-hmm.
But then Adams just completely flipped the script on him and was just hitting him with every strike he was throwing. And it was actually a really, really good performance by Arnold Adams.
Yeah, he's quite impressive here in this run in BKFC. I wonder if – I don't think Frank Mir's coming.
I don't think so.
I thought he was on the way. I don't think so. He's coming to BKFC. And I just bring that up because I thought he would walk right into a title shot. You know what I mean? And be facing someone like Arnold Adams.
Because he's got to be, what, 42, 43 now?
Mm-hmm.
The longer he stays away, the less and lesser of a chance I see it happen.
But it was another great night of fights from Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship. I'm just going to say it again. You can get this shit, the Bare Knuckle app, bareknuckletv.com, I think it is, too. Dude, this shit's $5 a month. You get all the pay-per-views. You get the fucking library.
It's the best deal in combat sports
right now. It seriously is. Best deal in combat sports. Check it out. They're not a paid sponsor of this show. Let's wrap up today's episode with just some really surprising news from boxing, which was Canelo Alvarez. He had the title fight against Dimitri Bivol, and he winds up losing a decision here.
Yep, and got completely outworked over 12 rounds. It was a hell of a performance by Bivol.
Yeah, I mean, let's give some stats here, let people, you know, kind of see how this played out. Bivol threw an average of 59 punches per round, landing an average of 12. Canelo averaged only 41-7, so he was outstruck on average every round.
Mm-hmm.
Bivol achieved double-digit punches landed in every single round, while Canelo only did so in two rounds. And, I mean, he's just getting outworked. Bivol landed 36 more jabs and 22 more power punches. Mm-hmm. Canelo's 84 total landed punches were a career low for him in a 12-round fight. His previous low was 117 when he fought Floyd Mayweather Jr., bro. That's how bad this performance was for him.
Yeah. Well, and I also do think, like, he was just frustrated, too. Like, if you really, you just watch how his offense was coming off. Bivol's ability, like, to use that shell defense and catch a lot of Canelo's punches on his arms. Like, when Canelo fought these smaller guys and, like, you know, these guys who were, like, a lot closer to his size, a lot of those shots will get through because you're just fucking their arms up. When you're fighting a big dude and he's just catching all your shit on the arms, and it doesn't hurt him in the same way it's going to hurt someone your own size. Mm-mm. And I do think this is just a case of too much for Canelo. He dared to be great, and, you know, sometimes this is what happens. And do I truly think it, like, affects his legacy in a negative way? I don't know. I don't really think it does.
I don't think it does either because of the weight class that it took place in. Yeah. So, you know, he's moving up to where he's definitely the smaller guy.
Yeah.
And giving up advantages here. And, you know, if he fought a young lion, who's eight now, young lion's now at 19-0-1, I do believe.
Yeah, I think he's...
And with a hell of a name on his resume. And I think what's next for Canelo is really important. I mean, if they keep the Triple G fight, okay, you better win that convincingly.
Yeah.
You know, if he comes back and goes down to where he should be fighting and into his weight class, convincing victory, I think he just cruises on doing his thing.
And then there's also been talk in the last couple of weeks also that they've offered the Canelo multiple times to fight Charlo, and I think that's kind of the next after the Triple G fight, I think that's all, the next one that makes the most sense for him.
Yeah, that'd be very interesting.
Because now I feel like when you have someone like Canelo, like, I don't think everybody can necessarily follow the same game plan because not everybody has the same abilities.
No, people can't absorb punches like Dimitri could.
Yeah, but
they're not going to have that size. And yeah.
But with that being said, that's going to be something I feel like people try to do now. You know what I mean?
We'll see. I think that'd be a mistake if you're doing that, you know, down at 168.
Yeah. You can go all the way back down.
Might. We'll see.
Because I think that's what he thought, too, when he fought Kovalev. Because he, just like this fight, when he fought Kovalev, he was a lot more willing to get hit. I feel like in this fight also, he was a lot more willing to get hit because he knew if he outlasted the bigger man that he had the power to put him out. And I just feel like Bivol just never got to that level of tired that I thought maybe Canelo thought he would get him to, you know? When you allow your opponent to kind of, I wouldn't say he was like necessarily teeing off on Canelo, but just having the ability to land strikes and, you know, keep a pace on him.
The numbers kind of say he teed off. I mean, 84 to 152 on stats. But, I mean, look at the total jabs. Canelo landed 10 jabs.
Yeah, that's crazy. 46. That's crazy from Dimitri. Canelo fight. Yeah. When have you ever heard Canelo only landing 10 jabs?
Power punches only 74 for Canelo, 106 for Dimitri. I mean, but that jab stat is where it's at. I mean, 10 jabs to 46.
That's ridiculous.
So he outworked you almost 5-1 on jabs. Yeah. Canelo? Mm-hmm. Crazy, dog.
Yep. Well, I think something I saw Mike Tyson said on Twitter after that really I feel like hits home in this situation.
What's that?
He said that the second you stop fearing the man standing across from you is the second you need to get out of the game.
Yeah, that's some wisdom from the legend there. That's solid.
And do I necessarily believe that Canelo's at that level yet? No, but he better be careful because the less and less he actually – maybe this could be a good thing, you know, just in the same way as the Floyd fight, how Canelo progressed so much from that. Hopefully he can take this same loss and progress to, like, an even higher level, which it would be just crazy. But, yeah.
Well, let's circle boxing back into the UFC with this final topic on the show, Paul, which is Dana White made a lot of comments about boxing this last week. You know, Canelo Alvarez, even losing, had a wonderful payday, as we're all sure, okay? And I'm sure Dimitri scored pretty big here as well.
Yeah.
And Dana, when asked about fighter pay in a pre-fight press conference or scrum, basically came out, because they were comparing it to boxing again,
yeah,
and just shit all over boxing like he's known to do, but in a different way, by saying they were completely overpaid. And in Nobody's essence, overpaid. That what they were doing was good, like where their pay was in the UFC was good. And then he used his frequent deflection here of saying, asking the reporter, whoever it was, going, do you make enough money? Do you want more money at your job? Everybody wants more money. Like that, thing, like though. That discounts everything that fighters ask for.
But that's the thing. There's no such thing as making, being overpaid. It really isn't. You know what I mean?
Like, how could you make an argument that boxers are overpaid? Yeah. Tyson Fury had 96,000 fucking people who paid to watch in Wembley Stadium alone. Mm-hmm. Let alone the pay-per-view revenue there.
It's craziness. Just craziness because, like, first of all, your model sucks. Like, let's just be honest. It's, what, a 90-10 split with the guys in the UFC, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then you got, you know, these weigh-in show and win bonuses. Like, it's all that shit just...
And to be clear for people who may not know, the boxing promoters bid for the rights to promote the fight. In those bids include fighter pay. How can you be overpaid when they're bidding?
That's the market.
That's what the market is. It's an absurd argument. And these reporters either can't answer back or don't think of that, or I don't know.
Well, that's
how can it be overpaid if it's an auction?
That's what I was just going to say. That's the difference between the UFC and boxing is...
To be clear, it's not an auction, but it's like a closed
bidding.
More or less,
bidding, though, it is.
It's more or less. That's what it is.
That's where I feel like the UFC's whole model and their whole, foundation of how they put their fights on and how they pay people is just so outdated. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who, like, the whole, you know, weigh in and then win money, it's
win
just,
and show money.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, for those listening that might not be unaware, a lot of fighters, you know, they might have a contract that says that they get $24,000 per fight, but what it really is, you get $12,000 just to show up, make weight.
Yep.
And then if you win, you get the other $12,000.
Yeah.
That's not a $24,000 per fight contract.
And also, you got to think, like, a lot of these guys are not, they're not getting even close to half that money to begin with. So when you take half that money and you turn it into another half, like, you're just completely, they're fighting for free. Like, and then you want to sit there and tell, this is like the whole problem, though, that, like, if you really boil it down, though, Jared, it's like if you look at the UFC and what the landscape of how mixed martial arts is promoted versus how boxing is promoted, that's the issue. Yeah. You can't, for someone like Jake Paul or all these people, like, I understand and I like what they're doing, like trying to fucking push the envelope with the UFC to pay their fighters better, but I think the whole landscape of how fighting and mixed martial arts is promoted needs to change.
Yes.
The whole idea of it has to be something different, because the reason these guys get these giant purses and these guys get these, you know, just ridiculous, you know, amounts of money is there's a market for that.
Mm-hmm.
That people, let's transfer this over to mixed martial arts. When you had a fight like you had on Saturday, Justin Gaethje versus Charles Oliveira fight, there's a market for that fight.
Right.
It's owned by the UFC now, so they don't have to really necessarily promote it to the level that where, you know, it'll
catch
everything.
If it was an open bidding process.
But if it's an open bidding process, it could have been on Bellator. It could have been in 1FC. It could have been all these different promotions,
mm-hmm.
and it could have been either, you know, so much bigger or not, but it doesn't matter because the market's there, and that's what the fight itself is worth. So that, in turn, is what the fighters would get paid.
Right, and then eventually the market would adjust after a few, and people see how it is, and
that's the
Dana's
problem.
An ass bag with this shit, man.
And that's the problem with the UFC and all these different things is, like, although these fights are still marketable and there's still a market for these fights, there's no real competition.
Yeah, there's no competitive
marketplace. There's no one who's gonna swipe that fight from you.
Mm-hmm.
You have this roster that has all these great fighters on it, and you just kind of have just playing the chessboard.
Look what they did to Ngannou. You don't play the game? Cool. We'll just make an interim title. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
See, and then they'll just go, oh, he's scurred.
Well, not only that, too. Now that it's just, like, even last night, they asked Dana about the Fury and Ngannou fight, and he laughed it off. He was like, huh, I guess we'll think about it, but, like, I just don't see it necessary. It's like, man, are you just that fucking ignorant to the fact that fight will make you so much money?
Yeah.
Like, I just don't understand.
It's shameful. I mean, Dana doesn't even say the right shit in public. He could be saying, you know, we're looking at ways to raise fighter pay. Mm-hmm. And then just shut up.
And then he wouldn't even have, here's the thing. He wouldn't even have to intern, like, I'm not saying that I'd want this, but he literally almost wouldn't even have to intern do that.
No, he could just say it.
If he would just say it, but then that's,
we're looking
that's
into ways to raise fighter pay across the board.
With Dana, but that's what's wrong with Dana White, is at the end of the day, Dana's ego and Dana's image is more important to him mm-hmm. than anything else at all, I feel. Because
it's detrimental at this point for the UFC.
Because don't get me wrong, he's done so much for the sport and he's done so much for the UFC, but now what got them to the dance is not what's going to keep them in charge.
Dude, it's just like it's just like a fighter, dude.
Yeah.
You rise up through the ranks, you get there, you become the champ, you do your shit.
Things change.
And after a while, some young lion comes along and you can't do the shit you used to do well and you get your ass kicked, right? But Dana's not in a spot where anybody can come along and just kick his ass. Instead, he just stays up there doing the job shittier than he did before. It's like the champ who doesn't have the skills anymore but somehow stays champ.
But that's where, I feel like that's where he's wrong, though. Because here's the thing. Now we have, I don't know if we spoke about this on the show before, but now we have a company like One coming in, and they just signed that big deal with Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the ratings for the last year for sports and viewership came out, and One Championship was above so many major sporting organizations like MLB and MLS and all these different,
crazy.
Crazy, like, high viewership.
Definitely more than the UFC.
Yeah, they were above the UFC. They were literally within 0.2 of the NBA. Think about where the NBA is at and how long the NBA has been organization
dog.
Compared to how long ONE FC has been around.
Yeah. UFC best be careful. And, I mean, I don't know. We haven't heard anything, but there's this possible mysterious new world MMA league.
Yeah.
May or may not be coming down the pipe, too. Mm-hmm. And we've got a lot of fighters here at the end of their contracts. Like, maybe Nate Diaz does take the Chimaev fight and just loses and bounces, man. He can still go do Jake Paul and other shit because...
All kinds of shit.
Does he lose any shine if Chimaev kicks his ass? Everybody already thinks he will anyway.
Yeah.
Does it make you like Nate less?
No. I'll always fuck with Nate.
Yeah, same here. So... Shit, I could see his rematch with Conor happen in some other fucking thing completely. But anyways, Dana continuing to just shit on fighter pay is not a good look.
No.
Let's hope something brings some change here. Maybe One is the team to do it with these rankings in this new Amazon Prime deal. Rankings, by that I mean their ratings. I mean,
yeah.
I think that's the show for the day, my guy.
Yep. Thanks for watching, everybody.
We got information about our show and where you can find it, which is pretty much everywhere, including video on YouTube, all in one spot.
SWATMMA.com, where you can head over there, click the gear button, support the podcast, and then you can head over to Instagram and follow us at SWATMMA Podcast.
Later, everybody.
Peace.